We are back. College Golf Talk front and center on a Thursday. Steve Burkowski, Brentley Romine with you. It is just about the middle of October now, Brentley. I'm off to Scotland, St. Andrews, our college event, geared up Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We'll do a little overnight Friday and a Saturday flight. But I know you're dialed in. French Lick now, right, for the Corn Ferry Tour Championship.
Home of Larry Bird, and it's 66 degrees, so we're ringing in the fall properly here at French Lick. I'd never been up here. Didn't think I was going to make it. Flew into Louisville. Some of the hardest rain I think I've ever driven through. Could barely see, but we made it, and it's been a little bit of a blast from the past, too, catching up with college golfers of years past. Cole Hammer, Alvaro Ortiz, Cooper Dossi. I mean, Johnny Kiefer, you name it. It's been pretty cool so far. We're excited to get going. 3 to 6 Eastern time, Thursday through Sunday. And say a prayer. I'll be doing the card ceremony on Sunday evening as well. So let's just pray that I don't mess that one up.
No, you've got it covered. You're a big part of the broadcast team. Well-deserved. Great opportunity for you. And I will tell you, because I did the card ceremony probably 5, 6, 7 years in a row. Get yourself the index card. And you already know half the guys that have had their card. Get it all done. Put those to bed tonight. Name, who are they, a quick 10 second. I know you could wing it. The cards will help you, I promise.
I will not be winging it. I will be over-prepared. Over-prepared.
Emily Marin, the head coach of the UCF women's golf team, joining us momentarily because they were at the Illini Women's Invitational. Brentley, they didn't just win. They won by 18 over SMU in a field that included Auburn, Illinois, LSU, Texas Tech. They clean sweep the honors, medalist title going back to the city. Beautiful. A big-time statement for UCF in early October.
Yeah, I thought Medina was supposed to be a little tougher than that. But, I mean, well done for the Knights. My Knights, I think their second best 54-hole score in school history. And to do it against a team like SMU, which is kind of in a similar position, I think, as UCF, just in terms of program, former mid-major, now in a Power Four conference and has been around that top 25 the last few years. LSU to beat them by a bunch. That's a Tigers team that has taken some lumps early. I'm starting to be a little bit more concerned about Garrett Runyon's squad, but yeah, hats off to the Knights. This is a team that last year had some young players. I think they returned 6 of 7. So with Sandwich at the top, Molly Smith, a junior now, this is a team I think that is well equipped to make a run and get to the NCAA championship. It's been a little bit. It's hard to believe. You know, it's been since 2019, but I think Emily's team's ready to get back.
And with that, let's not waste any time and welcome in Emily Marin to College Golf Talk. And Coach, always a pleasure to catch up. Congratulations on the clean sweep in Illinois. What's your initial reaction, response to not only winning, but in the manner in which you guys did?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I'd say let's just do that all the time. It makes it really easy for a coach. It wasn't a lot of stress, but yeah, like Brentley just referenced, we had a pretty experienced group with Sandwich and Molly. And then obviously Mila, it's funny, last week I said to our assistant, I said, Mila just needs to break through. She needs to have a breakthrough. And I've been telling her for the last year, I'm like, Mila Jarine is a star. She just had to, you know, work through the experience and course management. And she's phenomenal. I mean, she's somebody I think to watch. I think in future years, you're like, oh, I remember Mila Jarine at UCF. And then we added Tiffany Tsai from South Carolina. She transferred from South Carolina, and that's the firepower that we need, somebody that can go low. And Tiffany didn't get to make the team at all last year at South Carolina, but you know, she's getting a second chance here and making the most of it.
What does a victory like this in the fall do for you from a coach's standpoint on the rest of the season, but maybe more importantly for a group of talented young women to maybe get that realization that you can go toe-to-toe with almost anyone in the country.
Yeah, I said to them afterwards, maybe you'll start believing how good you really are. Because as a coach, you're just constantly telling them, hey, you're good. You got to believe that. But, you know, wins like this give you that confidence and give you that belief. And I think it just it shows us where we're at. Not that we want to take, you know, our foot off the gas, but like you referenced in the beginning, we need to get back to that national championship. And we know what it takes to get there. And it's tournaments like this that really give you that confidence that know that we can go low and play with anybody in the country.
What's been the hardest part about the last few years, having a team that, you know, by all accounts is talented enough, is skilled enough to get to the national championship, but to come close and not get it done? What's been the toughest part about that as a coach?
Yeah, I always say it's hard. You know, getting to the national championship, it's just hard. And I appreciate that even more, having been there and seeing how hard it is to get through regionals. You have to have a lot of things go right. You're weak. You've got to have players that are healthy. You know, you got to have everything logistically go well. We made it through last time, 2019. And it just felt like our time. And, you know, we want to get to the point at the end of this year where we just know we have a team, even if we have one bad round, because you're going to have that, right? Out of three rounds, you're probably going to have one day that isn't the best, that you're still right there in contention. And we've got a hungry group. That's the other thing. This group, they really want to get there. Sandwich is a senior and she's never been to the finals. So I think we have a very motivated, hungry group. And I can't say enough good things about them. I said in my acceptance speech in Medina, they motivate me to be better. I mean, these girls work so hard. I was had to take something out to the facility the Friday night before we left at 6:30 p.m. And we had already practiced in the morning and played. And there was two of them out there practicing at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night on a Friday. And that's just what it takes. You know, it takes that dedication, and they seem like they're all in, and they really want to get to that national championship.
Now, I don't think Burko knows this, but speaking of your guys' facility, still at Twin Rivers Golf Club, right?
Yes.
Correct. Yeah. So Burko, that course is the course that I grew up on.
Oh,
did you know that?
I remember making the trip when I was in the Central Florida area, when I actually played and had time of going over there, but I did not know that was the birthplace of Brently Romine's phenomenal game.
Well, yeah, I think that's being a little bit too generous. But speaking of the facility, a lot of people don't know it was basically under 5-6 feet of water a few years back when we got that bad hurricane that rolled through. Can you just talk about you know, what's been done there and all the bells and whistles now that the Knights have at their disposal to get better?
Yeah. So that was pretty devastating. That was 5-6 years ago. It was the day before we were leaving for the Blessings. And we had the hurricane, and I went out to assess the damage, and I could stand on the front of the range and it looked fine. But then about 12 hours later, the water rose, and it rose 5-6 feet. It flooded our entire building. So we lost everything from locker rooms, our putty lab, all of our hitting bays, our computers. I mean, I had taken the TrackMan home with me to go to the Blessings, so we had that saved. So basically for the rest of that year, you'd have the rankings. We were a top 25 team that year with a garbage can full of golf balls and my TrackMan. That was it. So, you know, we've rebuilt it. Our athletic department dedicated the funds to rebuild it. We had to build a new tee box out front. But yeah, it's been a couple of years to get back just to normal. But as you know, we're always trying to get bigger and better with facilities. It's crazy now in college golf of how nice all the facilities and resources are. But and you know, that just made us stronger too. I mean, that was Sandwich's freshman year. So to come in as a freshman and you basically don't have a facility for a whole year, we just had to make the best of it. But I think that's what we're really good at UCS. We just make the most of it all the time. You know, we're always kind of underrated. We're the underdogs. Brently knows that. Being the UCF, you're kind of always the underdog, and we kind of like that mindset, and that's kind of what we play with.
Coach, you mentioned the word normal. College sports in 2025 is very unnormal, if you will, or not normal, whatever the proper phrase is, when we look at how college athletics has changed, the portal, NIL, you name it. It is a very different landscape. What are some of the adjustments you've had to make as a coach, and the challenges you face to, as you just said, get some great players to come to that underdog program?
Yeah, I've been coaching. This is my 26th year. So I've been coaching Division I college golf for 26 years, and it's changed a lot, as you can imagine. But, you know, I think a lot of it's for the better. You know, you, as a coach, you just have to sift through that, right, of what's for the better and kind of manage it. The world is a different place with social media and, yeah, and the NIL. I mean, honestly, we haven't dealt with NIL too much. I think that's a lot more of, you know, rumors and hearsay. But, you know, we have a lot of great resources now. And, you know, we've got great weather here in Orlando, and that's kind of what I pitch. We play some great golf courses. I mean, we're here at Lake Nona playing today. We're going to play Bay Hill and the Ritz-Carlton next week. So it's a pretty amazing place here, and I've been blessed to be here for 13 years. And, you know, at the end of the day, the student athletes are still the same. You know, they're still people, and that's what I say all the time. We're just managing people who, you know, happen to play golf. I mean, that's always been my philosophy is, you know, we're just coaching young people. I mean, they have everything at their disposal now with TrackMan and video, and they don't really need a coach as much, to be quite honest with you. That's what I would say is different than 25 years ago. So that's probably one of the biggest differences is they have their coach and their sports psychologist and everything at their disposal all the time. So I just try to support them the best I can. And it's kind of like Luke Donald said, you know, give them everything that they need and support them however I can.
Are you good with all that in your 26 years of coaching that they don't need you as much and they've got A, B, C, D, and E at their disposal as opposed to why don't you go play nine holes and see who wins?
Yeah, I would say they probably need a coach in a different way. So I wouldn't say they don't need us as much, but it's just they need us in a different way. And that's why you have to reinvent yourself as a coach. I tell all young coaches that, like, look, if I don't reinvent myself every year to keep up with the generations, and I always tell them they keep me cool, right? I mean, here I am at 49. I've got to know the new trends and the cultures and be able to relate to them. And, you know, so those are some of the things that they still need a coach here for mentoring. And, you know, I think we do a lot more team bonding, a lot of stuff for mental health that definitely has changed for the better. That's what I mean. A lot of it has changed for the better. So, you know, they still need old coach around for a few things. I mean, somebody has to get them to the golf course on time. So I'm pretty good at that.
That's kind of like me with Burko. I still need old Burko around to spin through these podcasts. But I'm glad you mentioned culture because with seven players on your roster, that represents seven different countries, only one from the U.S. What's the dynamic like? What are team dinners? What are team functions like? I know you had the team over a lot at your house and cooked dinners with them, but what is it like to have, you know, such a melting pot of young women?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, right? I mean, a lot of people first say, oh, do you go to all those countries? And yeah, I've been to a lot of those countries, but we just have to have a lot of patience and a lot of respect and get to know them. I mean, they're sacrificing being a long ways away from home and not around their family. So we know quickly here that we have to become their family. And that's why we try to be so close as a team and make sure that they feel welcomed. And it takes a while, right? And like I said, Sandwich, for example, I've never even met her parents before. It's been 4 years. They've never seen what she's doing here. So I want to make their families proud of why they're here, and they sacrificed a lot to be here. And it's just fun. It's fun to, you know, we've got all different kinds of cultures from Europe to Asia to obviously to America. So they learn a lot from each other, and we learn different customs and traditions and what they do on birthdays and at holidays. So, yeah, I just feel honored that they choose to come here and sacrifice so much to play college golf.
Now, you're a member of the NCAA Golf Committee, and then a lot of people don't realize, once you graduated from Penn State back in 1998, I believe, your first job or one of your first jobs was at Greyhawk as an assistant golf pro. So I think you're sort of overqualified to answer this question, but what do you think about the NCAA championship in terms of moving around or staying in one spot? What would be your preference without any other factors playing in?
Yeah, it's interesting serving on the committee. You see it from a different perspective and you get a lot of inside information, obviously, about how those decisions are made. But obviously, you know, we've got a great spot in Omni La Costa, and I think it's good for now. I mean, we hear from, as you can imagine, we hear from a lot of coaches about it needs to rotate a little bit, but there's so many reasons it's good to be on the West Coast that, you know, I know it's hard for the East Coast coaches to understand that travel. And but if we want to make sure women's college golf and college golf in general grows and to be in the spotlight, we have to be on the Golf Channel. We've got to be on mainstream TV so people can see us. And the West Coast makes the most sense for that, for weather delays and, you know, being on TV at the right time. So there's a lot of reasons. You know, I can understand just up front, you might say, hey, it needs to rotate, but I think we will be West Coast for a long time. Obviously, I'd be, you know, in favor of going back to Great Hawk. I think that's an amazing venue. So I don't know that Omni La Costa is the Omaha of golf. We'll see how that's received over the next few years. But, and again, they're doing a lot of for us there too. You know, the last year was the first year they opened the course. So I think it's growing, it's making some adjustments. So I think for the time being, it's the best place for us to be, and we're excited, and hopefully we get the opportunity to be there. I've been there the last 2 years for, as you know, you've seen me in the restaurant there eating for 9 days on my own. So I'm hoping I have my team there this year.
Well, we hope to see you there as well, and we're thrilled to play a small part in helping promote the college game for the women and men. Thrilled, as always, to be a part of it, and always great to catch up with you, Coach. Congratulations once again to you and the team. Keep it rolling, and let's pencil in dinner for the three of us in May at La Costa. How about that?
Sounds like a plan. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
You got it. Likewise, Emily Marin, the head women's golf coach at UCF. Brentley coming off that big win. Crazy that she's been there 13 years, 26 years as a coach. It's kind of following my timetable of how long I've been following, covering it, enjoying every bit of it. So, you know, we will continue to monitor UCF and their progress. Some other women's events to touch on: Oklahoma, the intercollegiate at Prairie Dunes, Florida with a nice win, Megan Propeck getting the job done for the Gators. They were 7 clear over Eastern Michigan. The folks in Ypsilanti, not too far from
the Ann Brew Harper. Crew.
Let me tell you, that big donation strictly for golf is starting to pay some dividends. And that win for the Gators over Kansas State, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and the Sooners as well. I think we just talked to UCF's coach, Emily Marin. We're always waiting for the folks from Gainesville on the women's side to make that run. You know, maybe this is the year, you know, match play could be in the cards. We'll have to see.
Yeah, and they've obviously struggled the last, what, 5-6 years. 2019 was actually the last time that they had been at the NCAA championship until a year ago. And then, of course, they end up missing the 54-hole cut narrowly. Paula Francisco had that situation where she got on the wrong shuttle to go to the wrong tee and had the 2-shot penalty. So it's just a program, I think, that is just trying to rediscover its bearings. And if you look at the schedule that they've played, it hasn't exactly been your A-plus schedule like your Wake Forests are playing. But what they have done is, I think the last couple of years, they've logged a lot of victories. And we say it all the time, winning's hard no matter what level you're doing it at. And so you look at this team on paper, a lot of depth, a lot of players in the top 200 or 300 in the world amateur golf ranking. I think Sui Wu was playing in the women's amateur team championship last week. She could potentially be a big player. But to get Megan Propeck as a transfer from UVA brings a lot of experience. She's almost like having a third coach around. And so that could potentially be the missing piece, getting a little bit more maturity within this squad, allowing Apollo Francisco to continue to mature and grow into her game. They could be dangerous. I think this could be a year where the Gators finally are playing on a Monday at the national championship.
Other women's events to quickly touch on: Tennessee, a 9-shot victory over Oregon State at the Mercedes-Benz Collegiate, Kansas, taking care of business at home in the Maryland Smith Sunflower Invitational. 14-shot victory over their friends from Missouri. East Carolina winning the home Pirate Collegiate Classic by 5. And Ohio, a 1-shot win over Indiana State at the Rocket Classic. From the
Isn't that women, Larry Bird, Indiana State?
It is, the Sycamores. The Sycamores.
And I'm in the home of Larry Bird, French Lick.
And
look at this synergy.
Last week at the A-10 Media Day for Men's Hoops, that if you didn't listen last week, I'll be doing a handful of college hoops games, A-10, the new St. Louis coach had spent 3 years earlier for the Sycamores of Indiana State. That's how they poached him. And you know what was interesting? He said Larry Bird is never around. No involvement whatsoever with the Sycamores. Now, I know we're going back before you were even born, and I was maybe in kindergarten, the most watched college basketball game ever, Indiana State, Michigan State, Magic and Bird in 79. But I need something. You got to get me a picture of Larry Bird Street, or I've never been to French Lick. I need you to fill me in next week.
So apparently the national rental car guy at the counter at the Louisville airport, who was super nice, he said that Larry Bird's childhood home still exists and you can still see the basketball hoop in the backyard. So
I want a picture.
I'm going to have to find it. There's a 33 Brick Street, like a sports bar, and apparently they used to have all of these. I think there's some work being done at your house. Is this the kitchen going in?
We got countertops going in. Yeah, we got a little action on a Thursday.
College golf type, going a little wild. But this sports bar had a bunch of Larry's old memorabilia that was in the attic at his home. And I guess within the last couple years, someone came and got it all from the sports bar and has put it in some sort of museum. So there's a lot of Larry Bird, I don't know if you want to call it drama, but yeah, a little bit interesting.
Do you know where Larry Bird started his college career?
Did he start it at, I have no clue. What state?
Close to home.
Was he at IU?
He was.
Wow.
Did not last a semester, if memory serves. Could you imagine Bobby Knight trying to coach Larry Bird, or vice versa, Larry Bird trying to play for Bobby Knight?
Well, I mean, it's probably a good thing.
Would Larry Bird have become what Larry Bird became?
What if he was better? You never know.
It's a good question. I know. I mean, now we're going sidebar again. Steph Curry, you got to be old enough to realize how good Larry Bird was. He played a game against the Washington Bullets purely with his left hand. They were talking some trash, and I think he went for like 35 or 45 points shooting with his offhand the entire game. Steph Curry's remarkable. There are a lot of great shooters in the league. I'll take number 33, and that is as a Knicks fan. And having no love at all for the Celtics, that guy was as good as you would ever find on the court.
Unreal.
Yeah, Google it. Go Google when he played. I believe it was the Bullets in the 80s. Somebody said something, and he said, well, you know what? I only need my offhand to beat you today. And he shot every single thing with his offhand.
Do you think Johnny Kiefer is going to go lefty this week at the Korn Ferry Tour Championship?
Well, what did I see? I believe our buddy Sean Martin tweeted it out. I don't know the finish. He has a chance to qualify for the Masters. He's 51st in the world golf ranking, which is absurd, but it speaks to how good his season on the Korn Ferry Tour has been. He could arguably, maybe finish top 10 at French Lick this week, not even be, quote unquote, a full-fledged tour member, and be teeing it up at Augusta National in April.
Yeah, or there's the train of thought where he might need to win to get that Battlefield promotion to keep playing in more events this year, because he's got to hold on to that top 50 by the end of December. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. But nonetheless, a pretty incredible story when you consider that he finished tied for 11th last year, or 2 years ago at the NCAA championship last year, two NCAAs ago, to just get into the 25 spot in PGA Tour U, and then dominated the Americas Tour, has dominated the Korn Ferry Tour. So it just shows, I mean, I don't have the PGA Tour U rankings in front of me right now, but if you're 31, 32,
you got something
don't
to play
give up.
For.
Yeah, you could be playing in the Masters in less than 2 years.
Let's head over to the men, the Fighting Irish Classic, UCLA passing the Tar Heels in North Carolina on the final day to win by three. North Carolina freshman Carson Bertagnoli winning individually in a playoff over a couple of guys. Oklahoma State, I think we can give them a pass, tied for 10th, three players at the World Amateur Team Championship. North Carolina, no Niall Shields Donegan in their lineup, but UCLA has been trending over under Armin Kirakosian, their head coach. You lose two really good players in Pablo Arreño, Omar Morales. There's something there. It has been a long time since we've said, you know what, the Bruins are a legitimate top 10, top 15 team. Maybe they're closer than we think.
Does this speak to kind of the caliber of coach that Armin is? I feel like when you get a guy at a program who really knows what he's doing, and obviously Armin's learned under some great coaches as well, Matt Thurman being one of them, but I feel like the great coaches always seem to not skip a beat when you lose two best players, you know, your two best players, and guys like me are saying, oh, well, they're not going to be good. I don't even think I had them ranked in my top 30, but you get guys who have been role players and they immediately elevate their game. Some of that's the player, but I think a lot of that's the coach and the fact that they've been able to go third at Sahali to open this fall. Now they have a win, struggled a little bit at Utah's event, but that was, yeah, it's kind of like a crazy course. That was that course where the cart went over the cliff, but they've got some depth, six guys who have at least had a top 20 finish this year. It could be interesting. I think the bowl of crow is already ready for me when it comes to the Bruins, and I'll be prepared to eat it at any point.
Hampton's intercollegiate, Georgia, a three-shot win over Wake Forest. Ole Miss third, Stanford fourth. The Bulldogs, Carter Laughlin, winning individually. The Rebels, again, without Michael Lasasso. And you're wondering if he's playing too much on the PGA Tour. I don't know. You know, two schools of thought of you're trying to get players ready for the next level. I think you can get away with it more in the fall than the spring, if that makes sense. I don't think you could ever deny a hot hand an NCAA individual champion for reaping the benefits of what comes along with it.
Yeah, I tend to agree, right? I mean, he's winning the NCAA championship, you've kind of earned the right to do this. I will say the trend does not look great right now for Michael. I mean, it's clear that there's something missing just in terms of how his game's going to translate at that next level. And to be honest, he's only played two amateur events, amateur college events, since the end of that NCAAs, and not including the Walker Cup. That's a team competition. But he finished 214th at the USAM in stroke play. Like, that's not great. He was outside the top 20 in his lone start this fall at the honors course. And then you have the issue with the Sanderson with the two-shot penalty and declining media afterwards. I think there probably needs to be a moment for Michael where he kind of looks in the mirror a little bit and asks himself, am I doing everything correctly to ensure that I'm going to have a successful, you know, 10, 20 year professional golf career? Because right now there are some concerns, at least from my vantage point. I'm not super close to it. I'm looking at things from 20,000 feet, but just looking at the numbers, looking at some of the other things off the golf course, talking to other people who have played with them, it seems like there needs to be a little bit of a reckoning. And I mean, this is golf. We're not talking about anything super serious, but I think that he needs to get back on the right track because he's a heck of a talent. He's good in front of a camera, good in front of a microphone. He's got a lot of things going for him. I just don't know if he's necessarily on the right track right now.
Yeah, some people mature quicker than others, shall we say. But the talent's there. We'll see how that plays out for him over the course of the next 6 or 7 months. Some other results: Trinity Forest Invitational, USC and Rice tied at the top. A little bit of a disappointing showing for SMU at home. They end up in fourth. Florida Gulf Coast, defending home turf, they win the West Bay Collegiate. Arkansas State, they also win at home, taking the Bubba Barnett Intercollegiate, 26 shots over UT Martin. And then how about Mississippi State edging Kentucky at the Cullen Brown Collegiate? A really emotional moment with Cullen's sister, Catherine, hitting the ceremonial first shot. Cullen passed away just over 5 years ago, his lengthy battle with cancer. So, I remember when we documented it, and then to be at the blessings when his college teammate won Alex with Goff, the bag. Yeah. You know, it's
time emotional.
Flies. Yeah, time does fly, but it's great to see that the memory of such a good young man continues to resonate in a sport that meant so much to him. It is October 9th as we wind down, and you
know where this
is
going.
Weekly rundown. We still don't have official college golf rankings. Now, I saw you and a couple of our buddies, Lance and Cameron, at Golf Week, come up with your rankings. It's a halfway through
you're speechless.
The fall season. Unacceptable. I think we had the same conversation last year.
No, and the year before.
It's they lose a lot of credibility from my viewpoint that now 6 or 7 weeks in, and you're much closer to it than I am. What is the reasoning? Why is it almost the middle of October? Is it they need more data? They're not equipped to do it before I completely rip them. What's their side of the story?
Last year, I think October 15th was that date. And if you remember correctly, I think there was a little bit of a delay too, whether it was last year, maybe it was 2 years ago. But this isn't sort of out of the realm of what we've seen. However, you know, just because you're contractually obligated not to run a ranking till October 15th, I think things need to change. You know, teams are front loading their fall schedules more than they ever have. They're not playing as much into early November. And especially at the D2, the D3 level, I mean, you look at Gustavus College, who you know, was in the news during the USAM with Jimmy Abdo making that great run. Half their season's already over. And so something's got to change. Like, we need to have someone in charge of the rankings of kind of the college golf statistical platform who knows the game, who could say, all right, this isn't going to work. Like, we need to change this. Like, why can't Mark Brody run a ranking on September, late September? I realize you can't do it kind of off the bat because the rankings will look a little weird. But, I mean, there's some other coaches, like John Rehorn from Oregon State runs a Substack called The Differential, and he's been doing men's and women's team rankings. And he's been doing them for, almost a month now. So there's no excuse at this point. And college football's got rankings. College basketball has rankings right out the gates. And if it wasn't for people like us doing preseason rankings and doing this college golf media poll that Lance thought up, I mean, everyone would be in the dark, and no one has any idea what's going on. And it's got to change. But yeah, it's not like they're contractually obligated, I guess, to not run a ranking until mid-October. That'll be the defense. But again, it's not like it's a law that's like a constitutional mandate that things can be changed.
It's from my viewpoint, it loses credibility with whatever they're putting out.
Yeah.
To your point, what do we got? Oregon and Indiana this week in football, a couple of top 8 teams. Oh, well, we're going to go to St. Andrews and have a college event next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Well, here's Team X, but don't know where they're ranked because there's no rank.
There's a coaches poll. But the coaches, but they're not watching the games. Like, there's not as much exposure as like a football coaches pull back. So the coaches are reliant on the rankings, and it's a mess.
Yeah. All right. So be it. Maybe next week's a different answer. Probably not. But as you said, who would be number one for me? I took a quick glance at your guys' results and was kind of on the same path. But I don't want to say it's clear cut, but it's easy for me to say Wake women and I believe Oklahoma State men. Even though that tie for 10th, I'm taking into account they didn't have their full complement. But what we've seen from those two, not a clear number one, but I think it's easy at this point to say, especially for Wake women. I think they've come out of the gates quickly, and I wouldn't say a surprise, but maybe they're just better than we thought they would be this early.
Yeah, and I'm on board with you. Obviously, if there was an actual computer ranking, Oklahoma State men wouldn't be number one after this week. But in terms of who's performed the best when they're at their best, it's been Oklahoma State. And then I might, you know, if I was just doing a poll based on, you know, potential, you know, Stanford would probably still be number one. They clearly are a better team than Wake Forest, but Wake Forest beat them head-to-head in 54 holes of stroke play to me, and then goes on and wins the match play portion as well. Like, to me, they've earned it, and they deserve to be number one. And I would bet that the computers would probably agree as well, but who knows.
Let's wrap it up with the tournament name of the week. Who are
those
that we are considering?
All right. Well, we're going to start with the TMU Danish Classic. I don't know if this is just an ode to Denmark or to the actual breakfast item.
Breakfast pastry is what I'm thinking.
But I think it's the Masters University, NAIA program. I think that's the correct term. But so that's candidate number one. We have the Golf Week Put Me In Coach Invitational. No one was playing center field, but there were a bunch of individuals maybe hoping to get the attention of their coaches to get into the lineup. So that was in Muncie, Indiana. Lance Ringler, Mike Fleck from Ball State put that together. The Mustang Derby, flew into Louisville. Didn't realize how much of the airport is themed after the Kentucky Derby and Churchill Downs and the Twin Spires and all of that. But the Mustang Derby, hosted by Morningside, another NAIA program, which I think we can agree after a few weeks of doing this that NAIA has the most creative names out of any division. And then this one, I'm not quite sure what it is. I'd love for the folks at Cameron Division II program to explain, but it's the Hernkiar. It's Hrnciar. The Hrnciar. I don't know if that's a business, an abbreviation, an inside joke, but the Hrnciar just stood out. So we got the Danish Classic, the Mustang Derby, the Put Me In Coach Invitational, and the Hrnciar. What are we going with?
I love a great Danish, so I think I'm going with the Danish.
You're gonna have a couple of Danishes next week in Scotland at the Roussacks and the.
I'm not telling you it's not in play.
One of the best breakfast spots ever, by the way, is to sit in one of those bay windows.
Yep, look
at the Roussacks. Look right out at the 18th hole, the first tee box at the Old Course. Very, very, very good breakfast spread, by the way, at the Roussacks. Top notch place, and I'm very jealous. I was going to go out there again this year, maybe tee it up again on the Old Course, but, you know, Corn Ferry Tour duty calls. That would have been quite the jet set to go from Sunday night. And
it would have been aggressive. It would have been aggressive.
Very aggressive.
Well, good
luck. It's a Danish classic. I agree.
Let's roll with that. Knock 'em dead this week. We will reconvene. It's going to be a quick turnaround. I'm thinking probably next Friday as I fly back Thursday, because then I'm home for 2 days, and then I head off to Dubai for the Asia-Pacific Amateur. So
I'll have to get some sort of guest co-host the week that you're in Dubai. That's going to be I don't know what the time difference is, but it would.
Yeah, 8 or 9 hours, I think. I think that's a good plan to have somebody in place 2 weeks from now. But our thanks to Emily Marin, UCF women's head golf coach, joining us after their big victory in Illinois. We appreciate, as always, for you listening, tuning in to College Golf Talk. Brentley's doing Corn Ferry Tour. I'm off to St. Andrews. We'll do it again next week.